Hi, this is Sherelle Dorsey from TED Tech, and this episode is brought to you by Solidigm. The world runs on data, and data relies on storage. But most businesses rarely think about how crucial that storage really is. The truth is, it's no longer just a commodity. With new demands and constraints, especially from AI, the old ways of managing data are holding innovation back. Solid-state storage from Solidigm is changing that. It helps reduce energy use, shrink physical footprints, and accelerate data at the edge, unlocking more from your AI infrastructure. Learn more at whatsthestateofyourstorage.com.
Lock the gates!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fuck Nicks, what's happening? I'm Mark Maron. This is my podcast. Welcome to it. How is everybody today? Seriously, how are you? Nervous, excited, relieved, I would imagine, if you're listening to this show and to me. Wow, what a fucking weekend. I don't know about you, but as you know, on this show was getting pretty, not despairing, but just accepting of something that seemed more awful than I could ever imagine. And now there's some other thing happening. I don't know if I'd call it hope, but I'm definitely excited. I'm definitely excited. And I'll be honest with you. I mean, I knew, as did many of you, going into 2020 that, you know, this wasn't the best thing ever, but we needed to stabilize the country, which I believe we did in a lot of ways, those of us who were part of that. And now that Biden has dropped out, I'll be straight with you. I don't talk about this stuff a lot, but I'm fucking thrilled. I'm excited. I like Kamala, always have, and I'm on board 100%, but not just because Biden was going to blow it, or that he was too old. Those things turned out to be true heading into this thing. But I like Kamala, and I think it's going to be a pretty exciting fucking election. So we'll see what happens. Never a dull moment, never a dull day in this particular climate of our history on all levels. But now it's like, fuck, what's going to happen now? Here we go. Yeah. Pretty excited about that. Today on the show, I talked to Shalom Auslander. He's an author, essayist. He's been a contributor to This American Life. Also received a lot of attention and acclaim for his memoir, Foreskin's Lament. And after writing some novels and creating the TV series Happy-ish, he has another memoir coming out. This one is called Feh, Yiddish for Ugh. I think I'll clear that all up with him. I'll be in Tucson, Arizona at the Rialto Theater on Friday, September 20th. Then I'm in Phoenix at the Orpheum Theater on Saturday, September 21st. My Oklahoma and Texas dates needed to be rescheduled because I'm going to be shooting a little movie. And it'll be a big role for me. And I hope that your aggravation with me is tempered by the fact that I might be doing something funny and good, which this script really is. Small movie, going to probably knock it out in 5 or 6 weeks, but it will be my movie. So there's that. But here are the dates that I've switched. Oklahoma City was at the Tower Theater. That was on October 3rd. That's moved to March 6th. And it will be a different world then. So it'll be, who knows? Dallas at the Majestic Theater, that's moving from October 4th to March 7th. Houston at the White Oak Music Hall, that was October 5th, now March 8th. And San Antonio at the Empire Theater, that was October 6th, now March 9th. You can go to WTFpod.com/tour for tickets and all the latest updates to the tour. I apologize, but I got to do this, all right? There's some things I got to get done in my life. Stand-up, obviously, is the most important thing to me, to my heart, to my voice. This Apple show is a sort of experiment in terms of like how I feel about acting. It's going well. Had a nice thing happen the other day. Me and Owen did a pretty intense little scene emotionally, and we knocked it out pretty quickly, and the director was very happy. But I mean, look, it's this thing that I'm moving the dates for, it's a real movie. It's an indie movie, and it's a very funny script. And it will be challenging, but also in my wheelhouse. But I got to do it, you know? You can be mad at me for a couple days, but don't hold on to it, all right? Is that okay? Holy shit. I didn't know what the hell Biden was going to do, but I do understand. You start to wonder what drives a person that age or older even to be so stubborn. And I'm finding that with my father, who's actually got dementia of some sort, you know, what stays is the anger and a certain amount of pride. A lot of other things fall to the wayside. I don't know how capable he was always of being too emotionally attentive, but things remain. There's that stubbornness that comes from pride and probably a bit of delusion. I also just watched that Netflix, HBO documentary series called Renfair. The main guy in that is in his 80s, and it's a fairly astute examination of the type of stubbornness that comes from that pride that comes from being near the end of it. I mean, what else can you really hold on to? If you're not going to surrender, and it's a rare person that can, and just sort of take in the idea of passing with a certain amount of dignity or resolve, which I think is nearly impossible for everyone. I mean, what you're left with is a lot of fuck you, a lot of I'm fine, and a lot of fuck that guy. So I find it with my dad. Like even today, his wife got into a fender bender, and the guy, she was rear-ended by a guy that may or may not have been compromised, and it was kind of a bit of an ordeal. But she's okay, thank God, for a lot of reasons. And, she gets home and the car is bashed up and, I called to check in, make sure she was all right, see how my dad was handling it. And he gets on the phone and my dad's in his 80s. He's hobbled. He's mentally compromised. And, I said, it's good that she's all right. And my dad, who still has most of his marbles together, at least when he's talking to me, he says, yeah, she's lucky I wasn't there. And I'm like, why is that, Dad? And he said, because I would have fucking killed the guy. I said, oh, yeah. He's like, yep, I would have fucking killed him. I would have stuck a knife right into him so deep that they wouldn't even be able to find it. Now, let's unpack that for a minute. My dad can't walk that well. He certainly doesn't have all his thoughts together. But in that moment, that's what he would have done. He would have gotten out of that car as opposed to exchange insurance papers, just, stabbed that guy with a knife so deep they wouldn't have been able to find it. A knife. One thing he never says, I would have killed him with my bare hands. But I don't know where he's going to get the knife, what kind of knife it is, but not a gun, a knife. So the active fantasizing of spite and revenge that my dad has, it's just like, it's crazy. Where does that come from? And like, he's always been like that. He's not a violent guy, but his brain works that way. Now it's just all this stuff just comes out of his mouth. It doesn't stay in his brain. It's not these, dumb little violent fantasies he has. He's he's going to get out of the car. Why don't you just exchange your insurance papers? No, I'm going to stab him with a knife so deep they wouldn't be able to find it. My demented, hobbled dad says. I told Kit the story. He goes, well, yeah, I guess that happens with the dementia, these violent, impulsive fantasies. I'm like, no, that's been going on my whole life. So Shalom Auslander, who I wasn't that familiar with, but I knew his name. I knew a bit of his work. I read most of this new book. I knew that he was kind of a funny fucker and a bit of a fucker, but as am I. The new memoir, Fe, comes out tomorrow. You can buy it now wherever books are sold. And this is me talking to Shalom Auslander. A little Jew-on-Jew action here on WTF. Enjoy it.
Hi, this is Sherelle Dorsey from TED Tech, and this episode is brought to you by Solidigm. The world runs on data, and data relies on storage. But most businesses rarely think about how crucial that storage really is. The truth is, it's no longer just a commodity. With new demands and constraints, especially from AI, the old ways of managing data are holding innovation back. Solid-state storage from Solidigm is changing that. It helps reduce energy use, shrink physical footprints, and accelerate data at the edge, unlocking more from your AI infrastructure. Learn more at whatsthestateofyourstorage.com.
Did you see Black Mass with Johnny Depp? Did you see Mayor of Whatever with Kate Winslet? Did you see...
I try and stay very...
On purpose?
Yeah, on purpose.
Why?
Because I find that I just found like 20 years ago or so...
20 years.
It was affecting my writing and I just wanted to be able to hear my own...
So really, so your brain's that vulnerable to being
totally
taken away and misguided,
completely.
And so like you can't read anything, you can't watch anything.
No. If I read Vonnegut, I start writing like Vonnegut.
That's always the example.
If I read Heller, I write like Heller.
Well, yeah, those are so very imitatable. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like if you read Faulkner, you're probably not going to write like Faulkner.
No, but I start to think, oh, you know, it would be cool if I wrote like a whole little world.
That's Faulkner-esque?
Yeah.
Yeah, Yakna-Batafa County.
Yeah. I start going, I'm gonna create a little town with all these people.
And a few idiots, half-wits and hillbillies.
Yeah, and then it just comes out like The Simpsons.
Well, fortunately, there is sort of, not to use this language correctly, a fairly strong hillbilly component to the ultra-Orthodox Jewish community.
There is. It all comes back around. They don't think so, but it is.
I call them Polish hillbillies all the time.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's like, what's with the outfits and the homeschooling? Do you want to put on...
And no COVID. No vaccines, no anything.
Well, they got COVID.
Oh, I know. I remember getting someone sending me a link to like the New York Post after COVID started. They were like, isn't this the town you grew up in? And it was like the cover was... All these ultra Orthodox holding up signs saying, "We have a different law," or something.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Whatever that means.
I don't know what that means. It means you're dying.
Yeah, but where is the respect for the Jews that made medicine good? Where's the celebrating of Jonas Salk for fuck's sake?
I actually had that experience when I went to. I was asked to go to do a reading, and they're like, oh, come do it at the Museum of Jewish Heritage. And I'm like, oh, that sounds interesting.
Yeah.
I'll go there.
Yeah.
And I go there, and it's a fucking Holocaust museum.
Time for funny.
And I was like, you fucking assholes. First of all, you lied. You tricked me. But then like, oh, okay, so where's the Groucho Marx wing?
Sure. Yeah.
Nothing. Where's the Jonas Salk? Where's the Ramones?
Yeah, here's the Entertainers of Auschwitz.
It's nothing.
Room.
It's just death. It's just death and suffering.
Well, you know, it's a weird thing. I had this moment with Hitler the other day where, and it was kind of profound to me because I was watching that, the documentary. There's a 6-part documentary series on Hitler on Netflix. And sadly, a lot of it's reenactment. Like 80% of it is some guy, mediocre actor they hired to gesticulate wildly with a haircut. But there was this moment where I realized that, you know, I've heard a lot of the stuff before, obviously, the numbers, the idea of the horror of the Holocaust. I know that stuff. As a Jew, you know, you're kind of brought up with it. I think it's even in this book, the films. We saw those in Hebrew school, right? Yeah. But I realize there's a numbness to it, too, that there's a kind of mythological acceptance of the idea of ultimate evil being this person, this Hitler. Mm-hmm. And I knew that watching it, and, you know, my empathy is engaged to a degree, but it felt very familiar. And there was not like an apathy, but a numbness to the reality of it. And then towards the end, you know, he kills his dog, you know, before he commits suicide. He tests cyanide.
Is that real?
Yeah, on his dog and watches his dog die. And it was at that moment I go, like, this guy's a dick.
Right.
Not after watching the entire arc of, you know, 10 million people killed, I'm like, what a fucking monster.
Right.
Just kill a dog. What kind of fucking animal does that? It's right. A weird moment that my emotions are engaged on a different level.
Yeah, it's like an old joke. There's this joke about that, like where Hitler's talking about his plans.
Yeah.
And he's like, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and then I'm going to kill all the kittens.
Yeah.
And people are like, what? How can you kill the kittens?
Is there
and
a joke?
Like, and it's like, and it's something like, yeah, see, people don't even give a shit about Jews more than the kittens.
I think I kind of heard that joke.
Yeah,
before.
It's something like that. They do it with puppies. They do it with everything. Like, and then I'm going to kill the puppies. What?
What?
How can you kill the puppies?
See, no one cares about Jews.
See, no one cares about Jews. Yeah, that's the line.
There was stuff in there that that I really didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
There's little moments where I don't think I knew the arc of the unfolding of it at all. You know, like I know the concentration camps. I know he tried to kill Jews. But the sort of evolving of the policy.
Right. I thought you meant the show. Like, I didn't see him dying.
Yeah, I don't want to spoil anything, but he kills himself in the bunker. But
God damn it. Yeah, I was five episodes in.
Spoiler alert. I used to do a joke that years ago where, because of the internet, I thought that eventually people will, you know, history will be untethered from any sort of context.
Mm-hmm.
And there'll be a whole generation who will say things like, wait, Hitler's the guy with the mustache? And that's all they'll know.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because I have a Groucho tattoo.
Oh, yeah?
And I got it years ago. But as I get older, he's slowly starting to become Hitler.
He's Hitlerizing the skin shrinkage.
Yeah, something's going on here.
What's your relationship with Groucho Marx?
Oh, he's just always, he's a good reminder for me
of
to not take anything seriously.
Yeah?
Yeah.
So do you find you have success at that?
Well, I try to. I mean, I wouldn't, if I had complete success, I wouldn't need it.
Yeah.
But I think I veer toward that way sometimes.
Do you remember him as a kid? Did you see repeats? Like, was
there? Yeah. Yeah. And then I started to read him.
Yeah.
As I got older.
Yeah.
If you ever read The Letters of Groucho Marx.
I have it, and I've
amazing,
poked through it.
Amazing.
You just went
amazing.
Through it?
Yeah, it was just like, he just doesn't give a fuck. It's fucking awesome.
Yeah. Well, that sort of comes into this idea of the entire framing of this new book, where, because I want to feel the weight of feh. that you're giving it. And I want to know, you know, what was the kernel of thought on that for you?
Yeah.
Because I know the word, mm-hmm. and I didn't grow up as Jewish as you.
Yeah.
But why that word as an organizing idea?
Yeah, it's just, that's the word. That was the word that I, you know, you hear when, you know, you know, you step in shit and you wipe it off and you go, right. Oh, fat.
Yeah.
Or something's rotten or something's awful. Or
disappointing.
Or if, you know, someone finds porn under your mattress,
right?
You know, it's this word that for me was just so much more dismissive than any other word in my world, even today.
Right?
Like, there's no word. There's nothing you could say,
like, because it immediately diminishes almost anything
to just vileness.
Just nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, any kind of accomplishment, any sort of moment of pride.
Yeah. It's or all of, destructive.
You know, yeah. Self-realization.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Right. Yeah. There's nothing in English. Like, ew.
Right. But ew. That's not quite right.
No. Ew doesn't do anything.
Yeah.
It's
yeah.
like, oh, a bug. Ew.
Right.
There's nothing. Feh is just like, feh just takes away your soul.
Yeah. If you're wired for feh.
Yeah.
Like, you're not, you're like, yeah. I don't assume that the general public, without explanation, is going to have the same visceral reaction to feh
right.
as a Jew who grew up with the, you know, let's talk about Jews.
All right, but only Jews in this country.
Deal. Well, yeah. Well, I mean, the what's interesting right now is that, you know, all these ultra Orthodox are like, we're not fighting. They like, I really wonder how that's going to pan out.
They've always said that.
I know, but now they've just passed a law that they're going to. Do you don't think they're going to do it?
No, they're not going to do it.
Why, they don't want to change their outfit?
I don't think they're very good fighters.
Well, that's sadly what that's probably why they're asking them. You put them all up front.
Yeah. Well, when I it's funny because it's so fractured, right? Yeah. That world. When I was a kid, we were very, very religious, but we weren't Hasidic.
Yeah, that's interesting.
And one time we had a day off, like we had like Thanksgiving off or something, and we just decided to cut across the Hasidic school to get to like a candy store or something, and they started shouting at us in Yiddish.
Yeah,
and just like me and four friends, and like the whole thing was always growing up, you don't fuck with the SIDS.
Yeah.
Because they're crazy.
Right.
And they just, and so my friends just yelled back, like fake Yiddish.
Yeah.
And they just start pouring out the windows, throwing rocks, like just coming at us.
Really?
And we had to book it. We just ran. And I remember thinking at some point, where are the fucking rabbis? And I turn around and the rabbis are chasing us.
Frauds.
Yeah, and then I'm like, I get back home, and they're like telling me, these people hate you, those people hate you. I'm like, I just got chased by SIDS. Like, these guys are crazy.
What are the nuances and the differences?
What crazy person you follow.
Oh, that's really it.
Yeah.
And that, who was it, Menachem, who was the big guy?
Oh, Schneerson, yeah.
Schneerson. Yeah, was he around then?
He was, we're still waiting for him to come back.
Yeah, yeah. But was he just starting out? Was he a young messiah at that time?
He worked at CAA.
he couldn't cut it.
He couldn't cut it.
Yeah, he had a couple of failed movies. I've only talked to one lapsed ultra-Orthodox before, and it was kind of disturbing. But I think he might have been Hasidic. Mm-hmm. His name's Loser Chwersky.
Oh, yeah.
You know him?
Oh, yeah.
He's an actor.
We were in the camps together.
The Jewish day camps?
Jewish death camps.
But, like, what I want to know, because, like, you know, I've read most of the book. I understand the language of self-judgment. And, oddly, the one thing I relate the most to is this sort of, you know, thing that pops up occasionally throughout the book. Does she think I'm fat? Does he think I'm fat? The fuck is that?
I
mean, where does that come from? Because it's plagued my entire fucking life. Fear of fat.
Yeah, we were told it.
Were we?
Yes.
Well, my mother was anorexic. That's all I know. So I know directly psychologically, but I didn't think it was fundamentally a Jewish thing.
No, I don't think it's fundamentally Jewish. We're not born hating ourselves. We don't sit there
for whatever
reason. Shit, turn off the lights because I don't like my reflection. Like all I have to do, I could be in a great mood.
Yeah.
And I just pass like a storefront window and catch a glimpse of myself and I'm like,
it's fucking over.
Fuck.
Yeah, I have a real hard time with photographs now because or mirrors that I feel are broken somehow. They're like, that mirror does not work for me.
Yeah, yeah.
But this mirror works for me.
See, but I have the opposite where now it's so far the other way that if I look good in a mirror, I'm like, yeah, something's wrong with it.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever feel that I look good, but like it usually hinges on how gaunt my face is.
Yeah, so how unterrible.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, or just sort of like, I'm okay.
Yeah.
I have some self-acceptance. Well, that's sort of a question I have after reading the book, is that I used to feel this about Richard Lewis as he got older, you know, and his material was still coming from the same place. And there was part of me that's sort of like, nothing's better. No, nothing has changed.
Right. No. But no, there are additions. My family, like my kids and my wife, that's all. I can look at all of that and go, wow, good job.
You didn't pass it on.
Right. I broke the cycle.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
So you think you did successfully?
Yeah, for sure.
Consciously?
Yes, consciously. Yeah. And part of that was, I haven't spoken to anyone in my family in 30 years. Like it had to be a hard break.
Really?
Yeah. It just had to be a hard break. I couldn't be around it.
And they're all still out there? Cousins, whatnot?
I don't know.
I mean, even when you're, I imagine, are your parents alive?
I don't know.
What the fuck? Really?
Yeah, that's the happy ending, buddy. Yeah. By the way, for real.
Yeah?
Yeah, because it was not good. It was very painful. When I was around them, any of those feelings of fed just got worse.
Oh, that's what happens at the end of the book?
No.
No,
that's the end of my previous Foreskin's
Lament. Yeah,
but this was realizing, there's still shrapnel. Do you know what I mean? Like I get the bomb was religion, but this story is just something I can't shake, and I feel like I see it everywhere in the world now. Like you go online and it's just people shouting fat at each other constantly. Everyone's awful. You got to fix this about yourself. You got to fix even in like the self-improvement shit and the
wellness.
Well,
isn't that sort of one of the engines of capitalism?
You suck.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not a great system. It's not a great system. It's not good. It starts from you suck.
But like if I'm intellectually there, that's a quality of God.
The you suckness.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's what it is. That's what, if you read the Old Testament, that's where it starts. It starts with a guy creates a creature. The guy is perfect.
I know, this is the beginning of the book. Yeah. It's great. Yeah, yeah.
And then he makes him out of dirt.
Yeah.
He names him dirt.
Yeah.
That's what Adam means.
Yeah.
And then, like, chapter two, the guy steals for his shit and lies to him.
Yeah.
It's like, it's the story of a shoplifter.
Yeah.
Like, day one. And then it's like, okay, you know what? Get the fuck out. I don't want to ever see you again. So they leave. He has two kids, and one tries to kill the other.
Yeah.
And then it's like, oh, well, I'm flooding the world. Fuck it. It's so fat. I'm just sick of all this shit. I'm going to let one guy live, one family.
Yeah.
So he lets the one family live. And then what happens? He gets drunk and tries to rape his daughter.
His daughter, yeah.
It's just one thing after the next. We're like, wait a minute. Why are we telling ourselves this story? Why have we been telling ourselves this story for so long that it's like our story. It's like in our genetics.
Jews.
Like, no.
Everybody.
Everybody. You look at the world around and it's just like, yeah, it's not even, I don't even think it's Jewish. It's actually closer to Calvinist. You suck and you're always going to suck.
Yeah, but doesn't Calvinism posit that if you work hard, you might unsuck yourself?
I don't think so. I think it starts, you either roll the dice or you don't. You either get it or you don't get it.
But as somebody like, because this is what I'm curious about in terms of what Jewish identity means in that, because like I'm a guy, my grandparents were, middle class Jews. They're not very religious. Some Yiddish in the house when they didn't want us to understand something. My parents were, very self-centered, conservative Jews, but didn't mean anything. And the idea, because I feel that when I read the book, outside of whatever research you had to do around, Old Testament stories and sort of coming at them from the point of view that you do in the book, that at some point during your upbringing, that I always say that I was never taught how to use God. That like the idea of God was just like, well, this God, but I never was really, the fear of God was never put into me. I was never that curious. I don't seek God now. But I do realize that, somebody was brought up like you in some sort of Talmudic tradition, that there must have been some more expansive understanding of what God is and what his place is in your life.
Yeah, although it's just variations on a theme.
Yeah.
And the theme is he's perfect and we suck.
Right. But when you're young, what was the schooling?
It was pretty much that. I mean, it was pretty much like, here's all the things. Here's 613 rules.
Yeah.
Don't fuck them up.
It's a lot of rules.
It's a lot of rules. And when you break them even a little bit, there is no breaking them a little bit. I remember when my mother found out I was found a McDonald's bag in my car.
Yeah.
When I was like 17 or 18 or something, she said, you're finishing what Hitler started. And I was like, he started a Happy Meal?
So unpack that.
Because I'm killing Jews by not being a Jew.
Really? That's what it is?
That's the math.
Not that it's not kosher. That's why.
Because I'm eating meat and milk and not kosher meat.
And so you're killing Jews by not being a Jew.
Yeah.
And that was said with belief.
Oh, that was a condemnation. That was said with fe.
Yeah.
Yeah, how could you?
Start to first realize this? I mean, like, how insulated was that community? Where is it, Monzi?
Yeah, it's pretty, I mean, if you're in the Hasidic part of it, it's completely. For me, I ended up, I started out in an ultra Orthodox school, and then like middle school moved to slightly less, which meant there were girls. Like it was all boys before.
Oh, you write in the book like you could do two classes with girls.
Yeah, math and science, but that was it. And then you can hang out and talk to them, but it wasn't very. And then I went to high school again, all boys, but it was in New York City, and I would. And that was where the sort of awakening started. I would start to skip Talmud class and go down to Times Square and go to porn theaters. And then
did you see
museums.
The live sex show?
I did. It was very disturbing.
It's very disturbing. I remember I was in high school. I tried that too. You just see there's a revolving table.
Yeah.
That one place.
Yeah.
And there's just two people on
it. Yeah. And you can see all the other people across
the
way.
Yeah. You can see the other guy. Yeah.
And it's pathetic. And you hate yourself even more.
Well, that's the other component of this whole thing. This is a fucking self-hatred.
Yeah. Because everything ends up getting reflected back on yourself. But I remember,
How is that Talmudic? Because God is perfect, and you know you've broken a rule,
yeah.
So there's no way to release that into the ether like with a Jesus. You just got to sit with it.
No, you can pray and you can say, "I'm never going to do it again."
Mm.
But it doesn't take away. Like I remember being told that you start with a white slate when you're born.
So you're wired for shame,
and yeah, it's a certain wired for self-reproach for. Seeing yourself in the ways that they've told you to see yourself. And so for me, what was a bit staggering was when I started to leave and I started to read mostly, I would go to porn shops and whatever money was left over, I would go to a used bookstore.
Yeah.
And they were really helpful people. It was like, it was kind of eye opening. And so I'd
Now you dressed in the outfit?
No, mm-hmm. No.
When he went into the city,
got into my porn clothes,
some city clothes. Yeah, your porn shirt.
Yeah, I just wanted to fit in, so I just wore a shirt that said "fuck Jews."
Yeah.
But I started reading like Kafka and Beckett, and these people were all had the same feeling, but they were laughing at it in a way. They were trying to deal with it in a way, which to me was just a lifesaver. I was just like, oh, I remember reading someone, I read the first Vonnegut book I read, it was Breakfast of Champions, I think. It was the one with, he devises this whole religion or something. And I remember looking at the back and they were like, one of the reviews was, Vonnegut is our laughing prophet of doom. And I was like, I could do that.
Good job. If you can get it.
I could be the laughing prophet of doom.
Yeah.
But what was sort of disturbing was to see that story still told elsewhere, outside of the world.
Which one? The Adam story?
The You Suck.
Oh, yeah.
The You Suck. Because originally I was like, oh, this is just like an Old Testament problem,
Yeah.
There's not a whole lot of us, and so what, maybe it'll go away. But then you start to see it on a bigger scale.
How does that first reveal itself?
Meeting people who aren't from my background.
Yeah.
In the first case, I wrote a memoir of it called Foreskins of the Men and went and did all these book tours. And just met hundreds and hundreds of people who were not Jews.
Yeah.
Who were like, yeah, that's what I was told. Yeah, I feel this way about myself. I was told God is going to come get me from every religion in the world.
And the fear of God is that.
The fear of God, and underneath it, you're afraid of God because you're shit.
Yeah.
Right? If you're perfect, you have nothing to worry about.
Right.
But you're not perfect.
Yeah.
Moses wasn't perfect.
None of them seemed to be perfect.
No. And perfection is a motherfucker. Like, you don't want to grow up with that and have to achieve that just to like yourself at all.
Especially when there's a context.
Right.
That perfectionism looks like honoring Scripture, which you can't be perfect at because that's part of the clause, right?
Right.
You can only practice.
Yeah.
So there is no perfect.
Yeah.
But that's pretty honest.
But it's trying to, there's something about emulating God that's fucked up because he's, in my view, he's the antagonist of that book. if you look at it from a sort of literary standpoint, he's the bad guy. He's stumbling around drunk. He's like my father. He's like, fucking assholes. You know, yeah. God damn. I will not, you know, I'll get rid of you right now. Like, you touch that light switch and I'll break your hand. Like typical angry father shit.
Yeah, yeah.
But we pretend that he's the good guy and we're the bad guy. But it doesn't actually line up that way. It's actually kind of more interesting if you go, if I do this thing called Ungodly, this little series I'm doing of like videos where I take chapter and verse in through the Old Testament and read it through that prism of what if God is the bad guy here? What if the lessons we're learning isn't like, okay, so Adam sucked and he stole Never Steal and Tree of Life and all that.
Yeah.
What if the lesson of that story is
God's an asshole?
Don't freak out. Calm the fuck down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so someone took an apple, chill out.
Right, right.
It's not the biggest deal in the world. You're God.
Yeah.
You have a lot of fucking apples. So the lesson is, guys, don't turn people into salt. You just get help. You know?
It is sort of interesting, you know, that even if you're not religious or you don't feel like you absorb it, that it does, it is sort of a pillar of you know, thought.
Of Western sort of thought of, we're wrong and we destroy things. And I'm not suggesting we're great.
No, I get it. But you're starting from a place.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't even have a chance.
Right.
Yeah,
it's sort of like, I remember when COVID came out, it was like all this like antinatalism stuff and, you know, the environment's fucked, but everything was the environment's fucked because of you and it's unsavable, the end. Great. All right. So what do you want me to do? I'm just going to go take a shit in the ocean because it's fucked anyway.
Yeah. Or else just, you know, I guess the more spiritual approach would be to accept your powerlessness and try to live a fucking life.
Right.
You don't
good luck with that.
Right. But I mean, it doesn't necessarily imply immediate nihilism.
Right. But
for a lot of people, it does.
It does. It does. It just becomes...
Let's burn it down.
Let's burn it down. And you go on, you know, for me, like...
And God does that. That's what God does.
That's what he does.
Yeah.
And it's never worked.
No. There's always a few
people... It's never been helpful. It's never been helpful.
No.
Even when he leaves one, he fucks his kids.
Yeah.
It's like, maybe that's the lesson. That you can't ever burn it all down. And you'd be better off trying to find a positive answer to this.
I always wonder about that with like these people that are preparing for, you know, these survivalists that are you know, storing food, that are preppers. The preppers, I'm like, in my mind, it's like, why do you want to live there?
Right.
What are you preparing for?
Yeah.
I mean, do you have that much kind of biological incentive that you feel it's your responsibility to repopulate the world? Because if you don't have that, why the fuck would you want to live through it?
Right. Yeah, no, it doesn't make any sense. You'd want to be out of here.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I always thought that when I was reading like the things about like the, remember the Left Behind series?
Yes.
Yeah, it's like, who the fuck wants to get left behind? Get me out of here.
Yeah, yeah, let's go.
No, burn me up. Burn me up day one.
I don't know how... And I guess because you've done the research, but just like, you know, there's a real weird thing that I don't think I've ever experienced is that, you know, being a Jew in this country is now like viscerally frightening. And I don't know that I ever experienced that before. Mm-hmm. Am I using the word wrong?
No.
Oh.
No, I just, do you read a lot of news?
I read a lot of news, but I also... It's not so much the information, but, you know, culturally, I see, you know, because so many of the norms of civilized behavior around tolerance are breaking down. So there's this, like, a very kind of, like, to me, tangible undercurrent of sort of strange, glib, acceptable anti-Semitism.
Well, and for me... I feel like the biggest purveyor, now that there's no church or religion anymore, of the you suck story is the news.
Yeah.
And if I go and look for 10 fucking minutes at the news, I want to kill myself, drown my kids in the bathtub, sorry I ever gave birth to them, it's all over.
Got no answers for you.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I close my laptop and I go outside.
Yeah, I know.
And there's someone helping someone across the street.
I get that. Yeah.
And you're just like, what the fuck are we doing? Like, but in my head, World War III or Civil War II
is what you're holding in your hand.
It's going to be about ghosts.
Yes.
After it's over, we're going to realize we all kind of agreed on the same things. Like, this is created
by technological mind fucking.
And people, the people who want money behind that technological mind.
For whatever reason.
Yeah, for whatever reason.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that.
Because I remember we moved to LA, and my neighbor here, and I talk about this in the book, she's like, we get here, and it's like, it's palm trees, it's pretty, right, it's homeless.
Yeah.
And we sit down, and our neighbor invites us over, and I'm like, we're like, oh, it's so nice to be here. Yeah. She's like, yeah, if you like rape. I'm like, what? Yeah, if you like crime. She says, you got to go on Next Door. I've never seen it before. I didn't know what it was.
Oh, that's the worst.
I go on Next Door, and it's just, it's the apocalypse.
For your neighborhood.
Yeah. No, yeah. Every neighborhood.
Yeah. It's the worst.
And there's a funniness about it because it's like, everything's going to shit, and have you seen my dog?
Yeah.
So I used to joke that it should be called Found Black Man, Lost White Dog. Because that's all that goes on over there.
Well, it's seen black man on my porch.
Yeah, I saw a black guy. Where's my labradoodle?
Yeah. Well, it's true. But then you start to break it down with any of that stuff. And a lot of times it's like five people who are constantly posting because they're full of fear and panic and weirdness.
Yeah.
But because it comes through the internet, you're like, it's the whole goddamn.
It's
got
to be everybody. We haven't adjusted to those numbers.
That's true.
I remember when I ages ago, at the very beginning of all this fucking nightmare,
Which one? Life?
The internet.
Oh, okay.
I was writing something for NPR, for their site, and I was like, okay, but I've seen some of this stuff. I don't want comments turned on for this because it just ruins the piece. Like, no one reads the piece. They just go down.
Right.
And Joe Big Cock 11 says, this was stupid, and now I think it's stupid, and I don't read it. So just turn them off.
Yeah.
And they said, no, we never turn off comments. It's part of our social plan, our social whatever.
Media plan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then a few years ago, I don't remember how many, I remember hearing this story that NPR was turning off all their comments because lo and behold, it's exactly what you said. Like they have 20,000 comments, 19,000 are from the same five cranks under different names.
Sure.
And we're letting, you know, it's sort of like there's, as a kid, like—
That is the model for minority rule.
Yeah, yeah. Right. But like extreme, for Taliban rule, for lunatics. Sure. And that's what's going on. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. Like, when I was a kid, right, we had this thing of the village idiot, right?
Right.
Every town had a village idiot.
Sure.
And you knew they were idiots, and you just, whatever. You live your life, I live mine, but you don't pay too much attention to it.
Right.
To me, it feels like what the internet did was take all the village idiots and give them a village.
Oh, yeah.
So there's a village of village idiots, and the media have decided, well, that's 10,000 people. We can't ignore it.
Yep.
It's out of 8 billion. Yes, you can.
And it might not be 10,000.
And it may not even be. It's probably 2.
Well, that's sort of like the interesting thing about, like, you know, vigilante justice on social media platforms. It's like, what are the real numbers? And what is corporate reaction to these numbers? Like, I don't know, man.
All I know is that everybody I know, and I go through this myself, like, I'm very sensitive to that story. That story of you suck. And we're storytelling creatures. We live by story. We teach by story. We educate our young by story. It's our operating system.
Sure.
And once you start to go, okay, let me see where I'm seeing this story, you start to see it everywhere.
Mm.
And it's staggering and fucked up. And so I know, like, if I get together with a friend and they're in a really foul mood, I'm pretty sure they were reading whatever beforehand, something.
Yeah.
The Hill, Drudge, CNN, whatever. And they're just feeling shitty because the day was kind of okay.
Yeah.
Like, it really fucks your heads up.
No,
fucks,
I know.
It fucks kids up.
I've been doing material about it. I talk about that. It's impossible to have a good day anymore because as soon as you look at your phone, you're like, oh, fuck.
Right.
But then I said, but I didn't realize you could change the settings on your newsfeed. I had mine set to panic. If you set it to, you know, like celebrities and health, it's a little easier.
Even then, it makes me want to kill myself. Even then, I don't want to know what Paul Rudd's doing. I don't give a fuck. I don't give a fuck,
but it's a little lighter.
It is until they start talking and then they mentioned a political thing and now it's like, oh, I should go find out what that political thing is and now I'm I'm fucking in it, and I give up.
Well, I've kind of gotten that monster under control. Now the scrolling thing is a little problematic.
Yeah.
They're watching reels.
Because it's endless.
But it's also, it can become your primary emotional partner.
Mm-hmm.
In that you don't know how much time is going by, and because of the nature of how these technologies design this stuff, it's kind of like crack. They know the buttons.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, like, before you even get out of bed, you know, you've cried twice and you're exhausted.
Right. Yeah. But it's a good exercise to, like, you don't have to be an artist to do this, but just draw what that partner looks like. Because it's not going to be, you know, Gal Gadot. It's going to be Waiting for Godot. It's going to be something awful. It's a monster.
A monster.
A monster.
Yeah.
And you just, like, you know, I know, like, my kids are pretty well adjusted. And if they're suddenly in a shitty mood, it's because my older son, who plays bass, saw some kid who is 7 and has a connected father, and he's going on world tour. So now he feels shitty about everything he's done. Or my younger son's a painter, and, oh, well, this guy had a showing at a gallery, and now he sucks. And it's all this stuff that's just, I know there's good in it. Like, again, both of them learned a lot of their skills off of YouTube. There's some positive stuff to
this.
But I'm not sure how, but it's like the Bible. There's some good stuff.
Yeah.
Right? It's not all evil. There's some good.
Which parts do you like?
The menu.
Yeah.
There's occasionally, like, you know, if you dig deep enough, you find a good life point. A good for everything, there's a season. Okay, yeah. Great. Yeah, that makes sense.
Let's write a song.
Yeah, exactly. There's some decent stuff.
Sure.
But I can't separate it from all the awful shit.
And but also, like, once the wiring is in, I mean, before the internet, I resented people more successful than me.
Mm-hmm.
that I didn't need the internet to reconfirm that.
Right.
I just needed to know
that
person's, you know, doing whatever. It's all based on information, but you're not pummeled with it.
Right. Right.
Like,
you're not
when
pummeled
you see,
with it.
When you see enough 12-year-olds doing Van Halen riffs, you're sort of like, what's the point of even?
I got out here and I stopped to put gas in my car. And fucking, there's a screen on the pump with Wolf Blitzer on it telling me about who got bombed. I'm like, can you just shut the fuck up for one fucking minute, you ghoul? And by the way, you live in, like, some fucking mansion. This has paid off extremely well for you. Like, when I add this line in the book that it's the best of times for people telling us it's the worst of times.
That thing you said about going outside reminds me of an old Bill Hicks bit, you know, where he's watching CNN and it's just war, famine, destruction, you know, and that was the only thing on, you know, at that time. It was the only 24-hour. And then he'd open the door and you're like, crickets.
Now here's Bill with the weather.
Yeah. But that's it. but that's true.
Yeah.
And but I think, you know, what I feel in myself is if you even wrangle it in your mind and you understand it the way you understand it, that the impact is real, even if you can detach from it. What I think, if you're self-aware, what you're left with, despite detaching from it, is what's the point?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that, I guess that is fe to a degree, but that's the weird thing. When I talk to, you know, you've written this book, you do all right as a writer. I talk to, you know, artists, you know, who make films, you know, that are beautiful and creative and interesting storytelling. But there's part of my brain that's like, who's going to fucking watch that?
Right.
You know, what impact is it going to have?
Yeah.
What is the fucking point?
Right. Right. And to me, the point is, well, all you need is a drop, a little, you know, I tell myself that these things matter because, you know, a tsunami just starts out as a little tremble way under the ocean somewhere.
I think that's correct, yes.
And when it gets to shore, it's got incredible power.
Yeah, and I'm sure that, you know, people have read, you know, Foreskins of Lament or any of the stories that, you know, you go to events and they're like, that thing changed my life.
That helped.
And that's enough.
You're already better than Wolf Blitzer. No, I mean,
we don't even know what Wolf Blitzer thinks.
No, we don't. We just know how he scowls, and that wherever bad things happen, He seems to be around. Maybe there's a conspiracy. Maybe it's all Wolf pulling all this stuff.
He's Satan.
Yeah.
Wolf Blitzer is Satan.
Yeah, I knew it wasn't the Jews behind 9/11. It was Wolf. How did he get there so fast?
The Jews are behind everything. And he's a Jew, I think.
He's always there. He's always there when things go wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. Ready to go.
Ready to go.
Something, got something to report.
Something's going on. It's not kosher.
But that's an interesting thing, because the other side of that, and I know that you wrestle with it because I can see it in the book, is that there's always part of you that's like, you know, why isn't this getting a bigger audience? I've come to where
what's wrong with me?
Right.
Yeah.
Like, because I'm doing comedy. I got friends who do arenas. and I'm like, and I do what I do, and I know it's dark, and I know
dick
it's
jokes.
Yeah, well,
dick jokes
are just, you know, very limited, intellectual.
I got to write about boy wizards.
But there's part of me that, like, I cannot understand how, like, the jokes I do aren't arena jokes.
I had this thing, and it's in the book, where I go to airports.
Yeah.
And I walk into, because I'm a schmuck, I go into the airport bookstore, and it's all shit. Like, the only thing you can't avoid it.
And it's not a screen.
And it's all shit. And I call my wife, and I'm like, and she's like, what's wrong? I'm like, well, my book isn't in there. And she's like, well, why would you want it to be in there? You told me it's all shit. I'm like, yeah, well, I want it to be in there and be the only thing that's not shit.
And I'm the only one
that
knows that.
But I don't understand. If it was in there, it would be shit. Would you rather it be shit?
Yeah.
No, but I want it to be in the shit store.
Well, I'm glad you have these philosophical arguments with your wife.
She's just sitting there hoping the plane goes down. Oh, for God's sake, let it be over.
But that is the fucking thing, man. And it's just like, how old are you?
I'm 54.
All right. I'm 60. But it is a weird thing that sort of these things, and in earlier when I said that to you about nothing's gotten better, you know, you haven't resolved any of these issues, you don't have some sort of psychological proactive context to stop the fucking way you think, is that it just doesn't go away. Even if I know, like I know, like I don't want to fucking do an arena.
Right.
Do you imagine who the fuck wants to do an arena? I would just collapse into myself.
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
Right. And you'd have the price you'd have to pay with the material would be awful.
Yeah, well, that's never going to happen because I don't know how to do that. There's
right.
No, like, that's the other thing. Like, when you start asking yourself these questions, what are the books that people are writing that everybody likes? And I couldn't even fake it.
Right. No.
There's no way.
Right. So, like, for me, it's like, oh, people like disaster novels. So I'm going to write a disaster novel. And within five pages, there's a dog jerking off and somebody's angry. My brain just doesn't work that way. I'm going to write a horror movie, a horror story about a guy who goes in a house and it's haunted. And it turns out the book that came out of that is a guy buys a house in the woods and
he
finds Anne Frank in the attic.
Pretty horrible.
And she's like 83 and a total bitch. And it's like, what? That's not coming to a theater near you any
Why
fucking
not?
Time. I don't know.
You, no one optioned that book?
Well, actually, we're working on it as a play now. I think it might have life as a play. Actually, Phil Hoffman wanted to do it as a play, as a film.
Was that the original thing? Because you write about the Phil meetings.
Yeah.
That was the original one?
That was the original thing. He was like, I want to do this as a film. And you need somebody like that with that level of skill and also that level of power to push something like that through. But I can't play that game even if I want to.
But didn't you almost get it? Didn't it get on one where didn't it something happen with it? Didn't something get developed?
Oh,
Phil?
A TV series.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then it was really good. And then God killed him.
God killed Phil.
I'm like, dude, that is fucking dirty.
Yeah. With Phil's help,
wow.
God killed him. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
This guy is not fucking around.
Yeah. See, when it comes right down to it, no matter what you think, you still can go to God when the bad things happen.
Oh, for sure. For sure. They're like, oh, go out, drive out and go do Marin's show on Monday. I'm like, he's dead on Sunday. There's no way this is happening.
Oh, no. Sadly, I'm still plugging along.
It's a tough break for Marin. I got booked.
Oh, God. Thank God that your relationship with God had zero effect on me.
Well, it's not edited yet.
Your God didn't kill me. You shut up.
He's a motherfucker. He doesn't kid around.
But do you do the same when you have good things happen?
It just feels like a setup.
Oh, so the good things just were like, I know it's coming.
I know. Yeah, because it's like, oh, that's, by the way, that's the story of the Bible, right? Like, yeah. Hey, you got out of Egypt.
Yeah, guess what?
You go to that promised land. Guess what?
Yeah.
There's giants who are raping people there.
Yeah.
And, you know, other groups.
But this is really the structure of your magical thinking.
Yeah.
And it is biblical.
It's biblical.
And so this gets to sort of the root of what I wanted to talk about initially, which is that is the fundamental sort of like Jewish neurotic problem is sort of biblical.
Yeah, but I like, okay, so what I wish it were. I wish it were only Jews.
Right, okay.
But like, but Phil's not Jewish and Phil had more fed than anybody ever knew.
No, but I mean, but you can track it. Like, you know, his sense of the Old Testament and, you know, your education as, you know, Orthodox Jew being educated in a certain way. Yeah, there's plenty of people with fed.
Yeah.
But you have, there's a template that you can refer to.
Right. Yeah.
And that is
a source.
Right.
Yeah. A very definite source as opposed to like, But a lot of people do have that. If you look back, I think that's what a lot of psychotherapy is. It's like trying to go back and find out where the fe came from in your life.
Yeah.
If you're not Jewish, if you're not this, if you didn't have Bible upbringing, but the fe came from somewhere, from a mother,
right,
from
sure.
a father, from
yeah.
somebody at some point made you feel really, really shitty about who you are. And now there are people making gazillions of dollars doing that. And that's the sort of aggravating thing. That's the part where I get really pissed off.
But I think it's interesting that, you know, just by talking to you now, like in reading, like even just knowing that okay, so whatever, you know, God's going to fuck me one way or the other. And if I feel good, it's just a setup. That, you know, and that is a very specific gear,
mm-hmm.
because like you don't have to look at it as a setup.
Right.
It can be passing. Yeah, it can be totally disconnected.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But it isn't.
Right. But what I'm saying, that key to what I'm going to say as a Jewish education, a biblical education, it all of a sudden makes me want to reread the Hasidic tales. You know those stories that go nowhere?
Yeah.
And you're sort of like, what does that even fucking mean?
Yeah.
It's like, well, wait, just
right.
think it through.
Right. They're like the Zen tales.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't get them.
I went up to the mountain and he said, why did you come up the mountain?
Where's the rest of it?
Brilliant. What a brilliant insight. What the fuck are you talking about? I just came up the mountain.
What do you make of that?
In real life, that story ends with the master getting the shit kicked out of him.
But like, I've got fucking books up there. I've got the Martin Buber's translations of the Hasidic tales. And I'm like, I'm finally going to just do it. And I read two of them and I'm like, I can't even get through a third one.
No.
What the fuck do they even mean, dude? Did you grow up with that shit?
Yeah. I mean, all of that stuff is just...
Because I know you do some of them in the book and even the ones that you kind of retell, I'm like... What are you supposed to do with that? What is it doing?
I don't know. Like, and usually there's a negative aspect to it.
Or this weird kind of existential question that's unanswerable, but it's not uplifting.
Right. So one of the things I was talking about in the book is like being a little kid and being told the story of Purim, right? And that God punished the evil queen. And you're like, oh, and this is a room full of little boys. You know, hair's just starting to grow down there.
Yeah.
And you go, oh, how did he punish her? He punished her by giving her a cock and balls.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. What does that mean for me? Because I got hit with that day one.
Yeah.
Like, I came out with that shit.
Yeah.
And I'm not loving it either.
Yeah.
So what did I do? What did I do to have this shit?
That was a very
stuck
interesting turn in the book, actually, that, you know, you decide that you know, women got the break.
Yeah, because they're beautiful. Men are disgusting.
It's fucking cock and balls.
Yeah. We're gross. Everything they do is gorgeous.
And those names that you named all the rabbis, what was it like? They're not the real names. Like,
no, it's chagrin. Yeah. Yeah. Although there were like Rabbi Stern, and it's like, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But yeah, it was this thing of like, I know what the Bible says about women, but you look at them and they're like, wow. I don't know. I found a Victoria's Secret catalog.
Yeah, that
in the mail,
changed.
And I was like,
that was the game changer.
I was like, wow, that's the secret. The secret is men are gross.
Man, I just remember finding those first things, like seeing that stuff. You know, it's amazing how it can fuck your head.
Yeah,
because it is that's unnatural,
right?
And that's not. I don't know if that's fab, but it's certainly like. And I think it's got to happen to 80% of men that you know the information they get. That they begin to jerk off to is not going to help them in the long run.
This may or may not be connected, but it's funny. I once interviewed some porn directors for a story on this loathsome individual who died recently, Max Who? Hardcore.
Yeah.
And one of the porn producers was telling me that it's so hard today to shoot porn. I'm like, oh, more than ever. And he's like, yeah, because, you know, there are certain things I'm not allowed to do that amateurs can do. Like the feds are watching me.
Yeah.
So I have a girl come in and I tell her to suck this guy's dick and she just starts gagging and choking. And he's like, I can't do gagging and choking. I'll get shut down.
Yeah.
And he's like, honey, what are you doing? And she's like, well, that's what a blowjob is. No, it isn't. Where'd you learn that? Well, from your films, asshole. But yeah, but like, that's what she thought she was supposed to do.
Well, that's like things.
Just
you
asphyxiate
know,
yourself.
Well, that's you know that's the new way. You know the classics don't play like they used to. Right. There's a lot of gagging and choking and
asphyxiation versus.
That poor guy, he's just stuck in the old model. He can't
break himself out of it. He's stuck.
Yeah. But your father seemed like you really kind of color that guy as quite a character.
He's kind of a god character.
He is a god character. Yeah. So he's not really quite like that?
No, he is. I mean I think that was probably why it hit me so hard, because it's if you're like told that there's this prick in the sky, and they scare the shit out of you and don't touch your dick and don't eat cheeseburgers, then you go home and your dad's kind of like a nice loving guy and you just kind of stand around the table Friday night singing songs. Well, that's my dad, that's great. I'll worry about the prick later.
Right, there's balance.
But when they tell you that's your father in heaven, and your father in the living room
is a monster,
you're like, oh, fuck.
I know exactly what
I
this
know
is.
What this is, and they're all like that.
Because, well, you talk about going to someone's house and it's not there.
Right.
Yeah.
My friend who's just like, he is a really loving dad.
Yeah.
And it was just like, I was just like, wow, you won the fucking lottery. Like, I don't even know how to understand that.
Yeah.
You know,
and how'd
I mean?
That guy turn out?
I don't know. I think he stayed in that community.
Yeah?
Yeah. Because he'll do without the cheeseburger, but for him it was a close family, right? It was,
right. He can be a decent guy, maybe.
It's good memories of it, right?
Well, within the parameters of that. Well, that's the other interesting question. I mean, you were there long enough to see transgression in the community, to at least that must have sort of supported your reason for leaving. You must have seen at some point that it was bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember I had a rabbi, a principal or assistant principal in high school who ran away to Israel because he was diddling boys or wrestling with them. And I'd already been writing for a little while. so a Jewish place asked me to write my experience with in my
And he wrote
my
that.
Thing was genuinely like, I heard about it, and I was like, "Well, why didn't he try it with me? What was wrong with me?"
Yeah.
You know, I wasn't gorgeous, but I totally molested myself. I felt really horrible.
Did they publish it?
Yeah.
What's wrong with me?
Yeah.
See, I really am shit. The one teacher I had.
Yeah. He's going after everybody.
But me.
Yeah, so it's bad enough in high school I can't get girls. I can't even get rabbi.
So the decision to shut them out, I got a friend who hasn't spoken to his dad in, 30 years. And there is a liability to that, isn't there?
Well, it's not easy, but it's just an acknowledgement of the reality.
Of taking care of yourself.
Yeah, I mean, it came down to... The reality is that it came down to me or my wife. I met her. We're coming up on 33 years anniversary.
Yeah,
and it was just, you know, it wasn't all roses. Yeah. It was very difficult in the beginning, but it was always much more difficult when I was seeing them. And at a certain point, it became very obvious.
Because it opened a wound?
Yeah, because I'd be, if I knew I was going there,
yeah.
I was an asshole for 2 weeks before, and I was an asshole for 2 weeks after. And then there's always another Jewish holiday around the corner. So
right.
It was just one long run of being an asshole.
Yeah.
And it was like, well, make a choice. It's her or them. It's the past or the future.
Your sister, too?
Yeah.
Wow. Is there a heartache around that?
To be honest, the heartache was that they didn't seem to give a shit. Not that I walked away, but that it was impossible that what I was saying was true.
Oh, so they were brain fucked.
Yeah, it was like it wasn't so bad.
Right.
You know, I think one of the last things I ever said to my mother is, I just wanted, just acknowledge that it sucked. That's all I need to hear. I don't need to hear you're sorry. I don't need you to pay my shrink bills. Yeah. I got Prozac up my ass right now. Yeah. Don't worry about it. Just say that kind of sucked. And she wouldn't.
Well, that's like a narcissist admitting they're a narcissist, right? The whole thing collapses.
The whole thing collapses, yeah. Yeah, and she's like, well, all families fight. I'm like, this is WWF. This is mixed martial arts. We had a cage in the living room. What are you talking about?
it's so, like, you know, I've gone through periods where you don't communicate with them. I don't know, you know, I guess because you did that, it offered you the ability to not carry it on.
Yeah, or just to honestly, like, to be born 25 years after being born.
Right.
Just to sort of go, okay, so then who am I? What do I want to do here?
Is that what drove Foreskins Lament?
That's what drove that and Fe to big.
So you went back to
because
this.
Fe was sort of like, okay, well, I've kind of gotten God mostly out of my head. I can laugh at him, right?
Right.
Because writing, you know, comedy, it's therapeutic. It's not curative, but it's
right.
therapeutic.
Sure.
And you realize, oh, I can laugh at that.
And sure. There is sort of the act of writing. There is a lot of discovery there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So what happened then was part of it was meeting Phil. Part of it was, you know, moving to LA and COVID and the internet.
Giving
and
up the house?
Stuff. Yeah. And it was a lot of like, just self-destructiveness, despite having moved on from the God thing.
Right.
And going, okay, so where does this come from?
Well, what happened with your pancreas?
Yeah. So I was...
What did happen with it?
Well... You know, I for my whole life, I would try either diets or pills, whatever I can find in the sleaziest supplement stores in New York City.
Yeah.
Like total gray market, not
before
approved.
Zembic, before...
Oh, yeah. This was like... Yeah.
Before Fen.
Yeah. Mm. And most of it was just crap. Some of it, I found out later, had like a little bit of meth in it.
Yeah.
To keep your make you feel something, and then they stop putting it in.
Yeah.
Once they got you hooked, and then, and so, I, you know, whenever I heard of something new, I tried it.
Right.
Illicit or not.
Yeah.
And.
But you're not fat.
Well, but you're not gaunt.
Okay. Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
So I
am kind of.
So there was this. There was some new thing, you know, some pills you could take that showed promise in rats.
Yeah,
something.
Sure. Yeah.
And since I'm a rat, hey, that works.
Svelte rats.
Yeah. So rats get all the good shit.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't have to work out.
Especially those lab rats.
Yeah.
They got it made.
So, what a life. All the pills they want.
Yeah.
And so I took these things and... about a week later was in the ER.
Wow.
And they were like, yeah, whatever you were taking, I couldn't admit to them what I was taking.
Or your wife or anybody.
Anybody. And they were like, yeah, your pancreas is shut down. It's eating itself. And I'm like, that doesn't sound good.
No.
Yeah.
How many calories is that?
Is it burning off fat? Because if it's burning off fat, the shit is working.
How much does a pancreas weigh? Because that's like 5 pounds off my total. I'm going to make it.
Yeah.
And they had to sort of shut me down for a week. No food, no water, no nothing. To just shut everything down.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, it may work, it may not work. And it did.
Well, that's deadly, right? I mean, that's...
Yeah, pancreatitis.
Yeah.
And there was that moment where I was like, okay, what the fuck are you doing? Because there had already been very positive things in my life.
Yeah.
You know, in my family.
Yeah.
But there was this nagging thing always. And, you know, it's like, you know... You feel good, everything's fine,
yeah.
And then you just have a cookie and you're like beating the shit out of yourself.
Oh, God.
Damn, you know?
Yeah.
Or a shirt suddenly doesn't fit the way it did and now I'm a fat fuck and like, what, you call that a penis? You know what I mean? Like,
sure.
What's that thing?
Yeah. And no one can convince you otherwise.
No, no.
That's been my girlfriend's job, all of them.
It's a team effort.
Through my entire life.
Yeah.
At some point, it just becomes, you're not.
Right.
No, it's good size.
Yeah. I like one that I can carry in my pocket. It's like a wallet-sized penis. But it wouldn't make a difference. It wouldn't make a difference. It could be 4 feet long, and then I feel like I was too long.
Sure. Yeah, yeah. What am I going to do with this?
Right.
Got too much cock.
I'm a freak.
Yeah.
And there was that moment of like, oh, wow, okay, because this was close. You know, this was skating really close to the edge.
In a very kind of unique and ridiculous way. In a
uniquely ridiculous
yes.
way.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't, it wasn't heroin.
Right.
I think my shrink at the time even said something like, even your vices are lame.
Ridiculous. Yeah, yeah.
And I'm a hypochondriac on top of it, so I can't really do... lots of bad things. Like my hypochondria keeps me very healthy.
Are you still like pretty active in that?
Yeah, because so like I'll if I'm at a party or something and I have a cigarette.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure I spend the next day. I'm pretty sure I've got cancer. That was the one.
No, I mean I used to. I tell a story that I mean it sounds like something you would write. Where my dad was a doc, you know, and so I have sort of decided that like my hypochondria was an effort to connect with him because that's how I could get that kind of attention.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And it's just a story about, I frame it as how I cured my hypochondria. It's like I was away at college, maybe my second year of college, and I decided that I had prostate cancer. So I kept calling my dad. I'm like, I'm pretty sure I got prostate cancer. And he's like, you don't. And I'm like, I do. And I just kept pushing it. And I get off the plane for fucking Christmas break. And because docs all know each other, it's the evening. He's going, we're going to Bob Rosen's house. He's a urologist. I'm going to take you over there right now. We'll get you checked out. We go to this guy's house. He's eating dinner with his family. And my dad's like, my kid thinks he has prostatitis or prostate cancer. You take a look at him? Which is a very specific thing.
Yes.
And like, and so, Bob's like wiping his mouth from the dinner table and takes me into the bedroom with my dad. And thank God he goes... This maybe he should come to the office. So I go to the office, right?
Was he just trying to scare you?
No, I think my dad was like, let's just get this dealt with. And it wasn't fear. Because sure. I went to the to see Rosen. He gives me the whole exam. I have prostatitis for whatever reason. And he gives me antibiotics. And a couple of weeks later, I'm still on vacation. I don't think it went away. So I go back. I'm like, I'm pretty sure I still have it. So he gives me the exam again. And he says, you don't have it. And then, like, literally days before I'm going back to school, I decide I have herpes because I jerked off too much. And I, you know, I, like, rubbed myself raw somehow.
Yeah.
And I go into his office, and he's, like, you know, literally he's on his knees, and he's holding my dick. And he's like, there's nothing wrong with you. Do you like coming here?
Yeah, I think there's something else going on here.
But that put a lid on it somehow. I was like, all right.
Yeah.
You work this shit out.
Right. Yeah.
So my hypochondria is very limited to if I get it, it's rarely and it's real panic. Like if I think I have cancer, I'm in bed with cancer.
Yeah.
It's too much to handle.
I hadn't spoken to my brother in a very long time as well. And then out of the blue, I got an email and it was like, more or less, it was like, hey, I know it's been a long time. Dad's got polyps in his ass, and I have polyps in my ass. You might want to get your ass checked. Love to Orly and the boys. And that's, I was like okay.
That's the best email ever.
So I go to my doctor. I'm in a panic.
Yeah.
And she's like, what is it? I'm like, my dad's got polyps in his ass, and they're precancerous. And she says, well, everything's precancerous.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm trying to, okay, that was helpful. That was helpful. I'm going to write that down. I'm going to hold on to that. And then she's like, we're going to get you a colonoscopy. Mm. And I was like, oh, fuck, she really thinks something's wrong.
No, he's supposed
to. And she's like, no, I just know you, and you're going to be a lot more stressed out if we don't do a colonoscopy than if we do. So I had to go through that whole colonoscopy experience where they shove a tube.
Yeah, no, I've done it twice. Yeah. Try to get them.
And they're putting me under.
Yeah.
The proctologists don't have, like, a big sense of humor.
But they all think they do.
Yeah, this guy didn't. And he was putting me under, and he's like, is there anything else? You have any other questions? Anything else you want to ask me? And I'm like already high as fuck.
Yeah.
And naked from the waist down, and there's nurses all over. And I just said, if I come, don't tell me. And there was just blank. Nothing. Just blank.
I thought that story was going to go more of the way of a Jewish joke. Like, bad news is I might have precancerous polyps. Good news, my brother's talking to me again.
Yeah, he's coming over for Shabbos.
So that's where this starts. Now, after you've written this book, is anything different?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, what's, I think all writing, all art is great because you take yourself and you kind of tear a piece of yourself out and you hold it up and you look at it on different sides, and it's not what you expected. And maybe it's kind of silly.
Yeah.
And maybe it's funny.
Yeah.
And maybe it's touching. Maybe it's noble. Things you didn't even know.
Right.
So, whereas when you don't do that and it's dark and kept inside, it's true. Right?
Right.
It's like we were saying about the internet. Like,
oh, that's interesting. Yeah,
Then that's reality. But when you take it out, you go, oh, that's kind of funny.
Right.
You know? Yeah. Or, hey, I'm not so bad. Like, I learned a lesson.
That's right.
More than most people do in their whole lives. I learned one lesson.
Yeah, and
that's
also, to stay in the theme, like, if you take it out, then somebody can go, feh. And you're like, thank God.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and you get to laugh at it.
Right.
So that's the sort of magic of all writing. I mean, the hardest thing for me the past, like, 5 years was to watch comedy become a target. That was really hard for me.
The people, because they don't, everyone, you put a joke out in the world and people are like, oh, I don't agree. I'm like, it's a fucking joke.
It's not a debate.
Yeah. It's like, there's no other side to this.
Right. I didn't ask you to agree.
Yeah.
No, but it was, to me, laughter was always the saving everything. And so I remember hearing, like, a college kid or something say, oh, laughter is a tool of the oppressor. I'm like, what in the fuck? That's the complete opposite of comedy's role in history.
Totally. And also it's a miscontextualization of, like, I see everyone's kind of, like, ideologically confused or misinformed. So if one idiot says that, you know, someone's making you laugh to make you ignore the fascism or whatever. I have no doubt that that's happening, but it's not a general statement.
Right, yeah. Yeah, and by the way, fascists tend to kill comedians first.
Yeah, up against the wall, clown.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that true?
The wits are always like, yeah, shut the fuck up. There were actually, I was just reading about, this is fucking wild, the Nazis had comedy courts.
Really?
Yeah, where the court decided whether a joke was okay or not.
Right.
And one of their famous things was someone had named their horse Adolf.
Yeah.
And they arrested him.
Yeah.
And they put him in front of a joke trial and said, that's not funny. And they banned naming animals Adolf or Hitler. And you're like, that's hilarious. That's the best story I ever heard.
Yeah.
I want to go pitch that to somebody.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hey, Netflix, I got something for you.
Yeah. Well, there are joke courts of public opinion, that's for sure.
And now there are. Now people are, and it's so absurd, but then you have the absurdity reaches a new level when people are doing it themselves willingly. you know, and
what, censoring themselves?
No, putting jokes on trial.
Yeah.
Like, I get it. I get the whole don't punch down.
Yeah, but, yeah, sure.
But for me, the best comedy is never punching up or down. It's punching right at myself.
That's right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I've punched myself in the face plenty of times.
Yeah.
Right.
And comedians who do that crack me up.
Yeah. I think I actually thought of that. You know, when people say punch up or punch down, I'm like, I'm punching myself.
Right.
That's the way, you know, I mean, that's the safest trajectory.
And it's also the hardest.
Yeah.
That takes the most courage, because it doesn't take a lot to punch up, like, fuck the government, and it takes no courage to punch down.
Yeah.
But to actually, like, get up and laugh at yourself, and it's so rare.
The vulnerabilities of it.
So few people do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because you're like, I'm just out there.
There's a lot to risk. Yeah. I mean, but I have to do that at practicality, because, you know, if there's so many comics, so if you're going to talk about things outside of you, i.e. the news or events, there's 1,000 other guys, you know, working that angle.
Right.
And I'm not going to, you know, punch down anymore.
Right. Yeah.
but if I can stay in a zone of my heart and mind and take shots at that, no one can take that from me.
Right. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. And I used to really dig comedians who were, because writers and comedians were my sort of my teachers.
Yeah.
Right. And, I used to really like certain comedians that I don't like anymore. I used to really love Hicks.
Yeah.
But Hicks wasn't particularly honest about himself.
Yeah. That's interesting.
And I remember a line of his, and I mentioned it in Fe, which was, he had a joke that made me laugh for years, which was, human beings were a virus with shoes. And now, at this point in my life, I think, no, we're not. And maybe the virus is the story that tells us we're a virus.
Well, that's also like a riff on a Burroughs idea, really, you know, that humans are a virus.
Yeah.
No doubt. But I get it. Yeah, yeah. But it's over the top, and it's not.
You know. No, he's obviously a genius, but like there are people that that just don't hit the same notes because life happened, right? But I can go sit at Pepitone show and laugh off.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because he's just the most honest person ever. Yeah. Even when he's trying to be political, he's making fun of himself.
Totally. Yeah.
And he's like a true genius for me, because it's like he's doing the high wire act.
Yeah.
You know, there's like the little diving board, then the middle diving board, and there's the crazy motherfucker diving board.
Right. But he's one of those guys that, like, you know, it's a rare thing to have a profound anger that is constantly tempered by your clown nature.
Yeah.
You know, and it's a rare thing.
Yeah.
But it's a very funny disposition.
Yeah, because the self-awareness never can even break through the rage.
Sure, exactly.
Charming. It's just so like...
It's becoming ridiculous the more intense it gets. Yeah.
Yeah, the louder he yells.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's like the more he believes in something, the stupider it is.
Yeah, he's beautiful.
Yeah.
And funny guy.
That's like, I find a lot in the literature that I like.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I always hate, like, I didn't go to college, so I dodged a bullet because no one turned Kafka and Beckett and all those people into assholes.
Right.
For me.
Yeah.
For me, they were just fucking hilarious.
Yeah.
About
the
darkest things in the world. I couldn't believe people were taking them seriously.
Right.
Right. Yeah, I read this book about a guy who turns into a bug, and I'm like, oh, that's funny. Like, oh, you're reading Kafka? I'm like, what? Yeah, why? Does he have a stand-up bit? Does he have a Netflix special? Because this shit's funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I was like, no. He's talking about jurisprudence and the justice system and bureaucracy. I'm like, no, he fucking isn't. His family tries to kill him. They don't even care that he's a bug, and when he dies, they're happy. That's funny. Like, mm-hmm. What? Stop being a dick about it.
That's good. So you just stuck with the brain fuck that you were fighting your whole life, and you didn't get a second helping of brain fucking in college.
Yes.
And it saved you.
It saved me.
Yeah.
It did.
Yeah.
And it's difficult because my kids are all, you know, in college or going to college, and they have a similar thing, which is like, they're very like, don't fuck this thing I love up for me.
Oh, so you've given them that.
Yeah.
That, like, awareness.
One's in music school, one's an artist. It's like, when someone starts to creep in with that, well, let me tell you what music really is.
Yeah.
It's just like, oh, go fuck yourself.
Those who can't do, teach.
Yeah, and what's the Woody Allen thing? That's Those it. Who can't teach, teach Jim.
Yeah. Exactly. Well, it was good talking to you, man.
You too. You too, very much.
All right, there you go. That was good. That was engaged. That was kind of lit up. His new book, Fe, a memoir, comes out tomorrow. Hang out for a minute, folks.
Hi, this is Sherelle Dorsey from TED Tech, and this episode is brought to you by Solidigm. The world runs on data, and data relies on storage. But most businesses rarely think about how crucial that storage really is. The truth is, it's no longer just a commodity. With new demands and constraints, especially from AI, the old ways of managing data are holding innovation back. Solid-state storage from Solidigm is changing that. It helps reduce energy use, shrink physical footprints, and accelerate data at the edge, unlocking more from your AI infrastructure. Learn more at whatsthestateofyourstorage.com.
So, people, 7 years ago tomorrow, we posted my talk with the great Randy Newman. That's episode 831, and you can listen to it for free on all podcast platforms. One of the persons I recently got into in sort of a compulsive way a couple of years ago was Harry Nelson.
Yeah.
And, you know, and he did that amazing record of your songs.
It's quite a thing, you know, to do a, for someone who wrote as well as he did, to do an album of.
Nelson plays Newman.
Yeah.
And were you guys friends?
Yeah. Yeah. We were.
He was kind of an amazing guy, right?
He was.
He's one of those guys that had his problems, but
he had a low opinion of himself.
Yeah,
you know, we all did to some extent, but he really did.
Hell of a voice, though, huh?
Hell of a voice.
Oh my God! Yeah.
And he really, really could sing. I don't, all of a sudden, we were close.
Yeah,
and then. All of a sudden, I never saw him again.
Oh, right? Yeah. Well, that's
I don't know what it was.
Booze.
Yeah, that could do it.
You know, your brain twists up.
I was thinking about that. You know, there's a reason why alcohol came down through the years rather than something else. I think it's like a powerful, powerful thing.
Oh, yeah. It's always in
it's a bigger deal than maybe the other stuff is.
Well, yeah, it's like it's a real Jekyll and Hyde shit, man. It's a real kind of personality changer. I don't know why, but it's the most accessible thing. You would think weed now, but there's something about alcohol.
When Coke was in big.
That couldn't last.
I knew. Yeah, people don't want to be sped up. They want. You knew either heroin or alcohol is coming, both probably.
Right. Yeah. Well, those are the ones, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fucking, well, you're lucky you have dodged that, and that was not something that compelled you.
I didn't like cocaine
you.
That much.
No?
No.
Yeah, because eventually it's just you alone wondering if you're going to die.
Yeah.
It's always going to end up there.
And wondering why is it you're seeing someone from 14 years ago? Hi, mind if I come over?
Right, exactly. Yeah. Or hanging out with a guy you don't know for 3 days.
Yeah, that's right.
Who's that guy? How do I get him out of my house?
In Long Beach.
Yeah. There you go. That's episode 831 with Randy Newman. To get all WTF episodes ad-free, plus bonus episodes twice a week, sign up by going to the link in the episode description or go to WTFpod.com and click on WTF Plus. And just a reminder before we go, this podcast is hosted by Acast. Here's some guitar. Fresh stuff.
Monkey and La Fonda, Cat Angels everywhere.